Welcome to Amplify Your Process Safety, the podcast that provides the experience and expertise you need when it comes to process safety and risk management. Our hands-on approach will give you the insight needed, whether you're new to industry or process safety, in a role where you interact with aspects of process safety, or an experienced process safety professional. Join us in our mission to protect people, the companies they work for, and the communities where they operate by making process safety knowledge available to all.
Hello, podcast listeners, and welcome back to the Amplify Your Process Safety podcast. I'm Rob Bartlett, and today I'm joined by Joe Pastor. Good afternoon, Joe.
Hi, everyone.
In today's episode, we're going to be discussing an incident investigation report that was recently issued by the Chemical Safety Board about the fatal combustible dust explosions that occurred on May 31st, 2017 in Cambria, Wisconsin at the Didion Milling Inc. facility. It's been quite a while since the incident happened, and CSB did quite a job on this report. It clocks in at about 196 pages. We've read it, or read most of it, maybe skimmed a little bit, but we've read it so that you don't have to. So Joe, why don't we go through it and let's start off with the background. Tell us a little bit about the company and what they do there, and then also maybe what happened on this fateful night.
Absolutely. So some background first. So Didion Milling Inc. was the owner of the facility. So we will be referring to them throughout this episode as Didion. So they are a family-owned agricultural processing company. They actually have several different facilities. They've got like a soybean mill facility. They've got a packaging facility. This particular facility that we'll be discussing today was their dry corn mill facility in Cambria, Wisconsin. And they did also have an ethanol plant that's across the road from this facility that was connected by a conveyor, but it was really not affected by this particular incident. And so, again, this incident occurred just at their dry corn mill facility, which was originally built in 1991. And, you know, they added on to it throughout the years. And the most recent addition prior to this incident was added in 2012. So that's just a little bit about what kind of facility it was. So on the day of the incident, which again was May 31st, 2017, they actually did a temporary change. So they ended up connecting the discharge of two rotary gap mills, and this was to help them increase production. So they were operating as normal after this change, and suddenly employees started to smell smoke. So they went to investigate. They were having difficulty at first trying to figure out where the smoke was coming from. The CSB actually does go into quite a bit of depth about their investigation during this part of kind of the pre-incident timeline. And they eventually determined that it was most likely coming from the first floor of one of the buildings. And while they were investigating, unfortunately, the first explosion happened and fire started shooting out of some piping. They all began to try to evacuate and try to notify each other. And we'll kind of get into some of the issues that happened at this point of the incident, but there was a lot of conflicting radio traffic, which caused confusion with the messages that were trying to go out at the time about evacuation. And so meanwhile, this fire is just spreading through the equipment. A lot of it had interconnected dust collection systems. So there's multiple explosions happening. There were multiple employees here, not as many as were normally there during the day. This was a nighttime incident, but there were 19 employees there. And unfortunately, because of the explosions and the collapse of multiple buildings, there were five fatal injuries, 14 other injuries, and over $15 million in property damage. So a very significant event. Fortunately, there were no offsite consequences, but I mean, there was a lot of loss of life involved in this one. And every employee that was on site was either injured or killed that night. So a really sad incident and very significant in damage overall. So that's kind of what happened from a high level. So now we'll kind of get into some of the causes that the CSB identified in their report. So what did they point out for us, Rob?
Well, before I go to what the causes were, you know, if you look at the photos of the facility after the event, you know, this is a combustible dust incident. And as you mentioned, as you were going through the, you know, kind of what happened, there were multiple explosions. So you had your primary, you know, issue, you had a fire, then you had some sort of, you know, explosion, and that got dust up into the air, dispersed it, boom, you got another one. So you have secondary, you have tertiary. And, you know, it reminds me of what happened at Imperial Sugar, you know, back in the 2000s. And, you know, it's frustrating that here we are, you know, this is, you know, I don't know, 10, 15 years later. And we have a facility that has a very, not making sugar in this instance, they're processing corn. But again, something that we normally consider not to be hazardous, not only just causing tremendous amount of damage, but as you said, 5 fatalities and 14 injuries. So anyway, so yeah, so a lot of destruction, unfortunately, on that night. So as we said, the CSB did investigate the incident, and what they include in their report is the following for a cause. So first off, they determined that the cause of the dust explosions and the collapsed buildings was the ignition of combustible corn dust inside process equipment, which transitioned into multiple explosions. And that goes back to, as I was saying, you had the primary and then you had the secondary, and then that led to more and more and more. Contributing to the severity was the fact that the company didn't have adequate engineering controls, which then allowed the fire and explosions to propagate throughout the facility. And if you look at, again, look at that overhead picture post-incident that's included in the report, just a stunning amount of damage, just the, you know, the middle part of the facility just demolished. So that uncontrolled propagation caused secondary explosions due to inadequate fugitive dust management. So meaning that they had dust outside of equipment that then obviously had some sort of impact on explosions. So that was the primary cause, was, you know, the dust was in a position where it could ignite. Somehow it did ignite, and you ended up with this incident. There were a lot of weaknesses in the programs that the company used to manage their safety at the company. And they're laid out very distinctly in the report, but a few of them that I'll highlight here. First off, the CSB calls out the company for exhibiting a lack of safety leadership and having a poor safety culture. We talk about that in our podcast all the time, how important it is for leaders to understand their processes, understand the hazards, to manage their systems appropriately, make sure that they're staffed appropriately, and just have a good safety culture. And apparently they did not have that, or at least in CSB's conclusion was that they did not have an adequate safety program or safety leadership. Also, they had inadequate safety management system for combustible dust. So they didn't really have any systems in place to manage their combustible dust. The report talks about the fact that they were using food-related regulatory regimes for managing their safety, which didn't really get to the process safety issues of their process, including these combustible dusts. They inadequately managed changes. Joe mentioned that there were some changes that were made just prior to this incident happening. And as we see many times, that when changes are made, that is a prime opportunity for something to be overlooked and there to be some sort of an incident. This was another example of that. They failed to maintain critical safety information. They failed to incorporate lessons from prior incidents into their operations. They had inadequate emergency preparedness. Joe talked about the difficulty they had getting communication across the site, making sure that people knew what was going on so that they could evacuate and get off the site. Based on Joe, you said this, and based on what I saw as well, they said 19 people were on site and I see 19 casualties. So everybody at the site, nobody got out injury free in this, which is terrible. So another thing that they pointed out was a lack of flame resistant personal protective equipment. So in areas where we have the potential for some sort of a flash, either from flammable liquids or from a combustible dust situation where you can have that heat that you could get from a flash fire, there's flame resistant PPE that we can be wearing that will at least help to protect us. They don't prevent everything. You still can get hurt, or you, in fact, still can die if you're wearing it, but at least can provide a barrier or a level of protection for you for flash fires. So that's kind of what they boiled all of this down to. We had dust accumulations, dust explosion propagating through the facility, inadequate processes in place, inadequate safety culture, inadequate emergency preparedness. So again, there's a lot of things that were mentioned, but that's kind of what it boils down to. So with those causes, and one thing that I want to say, and I'll say it here, is that I've earmarked this to go back and read again. This is a well put together report. There's a lot of fantastic information here. There's a lot of ways that we, as process safety professionals, as industry, can learn from the mistakes that were made here at this facility to prevent similar things in the future. So it's 196 pages, I think, very dense in some parts. And there are appendices, which actually make it a bigger document, but there's a lot of really good information. So I do recommend that if you've got the time, that you do take a look at the report. But based on these causes, Joe, why don't we talk about the recommendations that CSB made? So it looks like we've got recommendations to the company itself. They made recommendations to OSHA, and then they made a recommendation to NFPA. So why don't we go through those and see what they recommended?
Definitely. So like you said, they kind of made these recommendations to those three different groups. They also did have some previously issued recommendations that are superseded in this report to OSHA. So we won't cover those, but they are in the report if you're interested. So we'll start off by the new recommendations that were made to Didion. So there were 9 of these. The first was to contract a competent third party to develop a comprehensive combustible dust process safety management system. And they said, for example, you could do OSHA's PSM standard, or you could look at the requirements in the 2019 edition of NFPA 652. And they wanted them to include at a minimum, I think this is 9 elements. So there's a list of these in the report on page 17, but the elements that the CSB is calling out here are directly related to the issues that they found and the lack of programs that were there at the site. So that's why they call out these specifically. They list management of change, PSI, managing audits, fugitive dust management, incident investigation, dust hazard analysis, management of engineering controls for combustible dust, PPE, and emergency preparedness. So you can see how that directly relates to what Rob was saying were kind of the contributing causes to this. So recommendation number 1 is pretty much, let's bring in a third party and get these programs set up and let's get them in place so that you can prevent something like this from happening again, because there was just really a lack of a lot of these programs when the CSB investigated.
These recommendations, they all, I think for the company, I could be wrong, but I think for the company, for the most part, they all start with contract a competent third party. And you know, obviously we're a third party and I like to think that we're competent, but the issue here, I think, is that no matter what you're doing related to these process safety type hazards, you want to make sure that whoever is doing the work is competent. Obviously CSB thinks a third party needs to do that. Sometimes they're third party, sometimes they're in-house, but you just got to make sure that whoever you're relying on, that they actually are competent in the area in which they are doing the work. So anyway, recommendation number 2 for Didion was contract a competent third party to develop and implement modifications to the pneumatic conveying and dust collector ductwork systems in accordance with guidance such as NFPA 651, NFPA 652, 654. And their primary concerns here was that we make sure that we've got a minimum transport velocity inside the ductwork to make sure that we don't have material that's settling out, because that's one of the things that they found for secondary explosions, maybe the primary one, but certainly secondary explosions inside the equipment, inside the ductwork. As there's some sort of explosion that's shaking up that ductwork, now you've got more fuel, you've got another source of a potential combustible dust explosion. And also they wanted them to implement inspections and testing as would be required for the conveying system, as well as the dust collector, the ductwork system, and all of that. So basically the recommendation was to make sure that they manage the pneumatic conveying system and the dust collector ductwork per RAGAGAP. We say right. That we talk about RAGAP all the time in our podcast here. That's really what they're asking for. So that's number 2. What's number 3, Joe?
Yes. So number 3 is to contract a competent third party to perform a DHA or a dust hazard analysis.
DHA. Yes.
On all the buildings and units that process combustible dust. As part of this, the CSB says that these also need to be revalidated at least every 5 years. And there's some more detail in this one that I won't read word for word, but basically, the other part of the recommendation is that they actually need to implement any recommendations or engineering controls that are identified in both the initial and revalidation DHAs that they're asking Didion to perform. So in essence, you know, they need to sit down and make sure that they've got adequate safeguards for everything as related to combustible dust hazards. And then they also need to make sure that they address any concerns that are pointed out in these DHAs and that they, on an ongoing basis, revalidate these DHAs. All right. So what is number four, Rob?
So before we get to that, one of the problems that was noted in the report for the company was that they'd done some calculations maybe 10 years ago, maybe a little more than that, that had convinced them that inside the equipment, they did not have a dust hazard. And so therefore, they did not think they had to do DHAs on various parts of the process because they said, oh, we don't have a dust hazard in that equipment. And according to the analysis that the CSB did after the incident, that was in fact an incorrect assumption, obviously, since the equipment blew up. But based on when going back and looking at that analysis, they were wrong. So another thing for folks who are at facilities, if you think that if you have something that could be a combustible dust and you think, oh, I don't have a dust hazard because of X, Y, or Z, make sure that you are checking those assumptions and make sure that that is actually the case inside. And again, the report talks about some of the problems with the assumptions that the company that Didion made. So make sure you're not making that same mistake. Okay, so the fourth recommendation, contract a competent third party to assess and implement engineering controls for the structural design and venting requirements of the reconstructed facility when they rebuild it, hopefully they will, to ensure that they meet the requirements of NFPA 68, which is the standard on explosion protection by deflagration venting for adequacy of venting capacity. So what this gets into is the fact that they had not designed the building to relieve the pressure that may come from a deflagration like this from a combustible dust. So because it was not designed to relieve the pressure, the structural building was destroyed. And that led to, or certainly contributed to, the loss of life and other injuries. So that's number four. What's number five, Joe?
Yes. So number five is incorporate recording any paper-based process safety information into Didion's existing electronic records management system so that the information can be reliably retained, retrieved, and analyzed in the event of a catastrophic incident. This is obviously very specific, but it's because they asked Didion post-incident, the CSB did, for certain process safety information, and Didion was not able to provide it, not all of it at least, and they said that many of their records were paper-based and that they were destroyed in the incident. And whether that is true or it's the case where they just didn't have those records, neither is good, because you really want to be able to have things accessible to people across an electronic management system. And as the CSB said here in this recommendation, and in the event that something happens, you want to be able to have an electronic record. So this one is a very specific one, but it's a good practice to not just rely on paper-based copies.
Yeah, we get asked that. You know, we go into lots of companies that have never had a process safety program, and you know they're an old facility. A lot of their records are paper. Certainly, their design, any engineering design basis, all that sort of stuff, you know, is paper. And when they ask us, you know, well, do I need to go electronic? Well, no, there's no requirement that your records be electronic. You need to have records and they need to be accessible. But having them electronic obviously would help to make them available if something were to happen like this. If your maintenance shop is taken out in an incident and all of your maintenance records are paper-based in your maintenance shop, that's going to be a problem down the road. So obviously, in this case, it's a good reason. That would be a good reason to make it electronic. But also just having it reliably available to folks, they know where it is. Anybody can get it pretty much at any time. I don't have to walk across the plant to go to the maintenance office to find some MAWP of a vessel, you know, because I've got to go look at the drawings and that's the only place where they are. So it's not a requirement, but certainly a best practice. Okay, that was number five. So now we're on to number six. So contract with a competent third party to perform a personal protective equipment hazard analysis, or as we also call those PPE hazard analyses, And there's a standard, NFPA 2113 is a standard on selection, care, use, and maintenance of flame-resistant garments. All right, this is a very long title. I'm not going to read the whole thing. Anyway, NFPA 2113 helps facilities to figure out what should I do for PPE for flame, what we call FRC, flame-retardant clothing. But also a hazard assessment is something that we should be doing no matter what, whenever we have hazardous operations, to make sure not only that folks are wearing FRC if they need it, but, you know, do they need other personal protective equipment for that particular task? Definitely a best practice. And if you're going to follow NFPA, then yes, you need to do that per NFPA 2113. What's the next one, Joe?
The next one is to contract a competent third party to update the facility emergency response plan and to train everybody on it. And this just points directly to the fact that it was kind of a mess with evacuation and communications during the time of the event. So this recommendation is just to really ensure that they've got a solid emergency response plan in place and that everybody's trained on it. And they do also include what elements should be included as part of this emergency response plan. So those include a signal or alarm system, emergency shutdown procedures, instructions for when and how to trigger emergency evacuations, instructions for when to notify emergency responders that they need help, response to potential fire scenarios, so like smoldering fire inside equipment, and how to prevent firefighting of process fires inside equipment. All right, so what is number 8, Rob?
Okay, so number 8 is contract a competent third party to assess and update the pre-deflagration detection and suppression engineering controls. And they reference specifically NFPA 69, which is a standard on explosion prevention systems. And what they're getting on here is they want to be able to detect when there's some sort of a smoldering fire or something else that may trigger some sort of an incident. We want to detect that. We want to alarm employees of the emergency situation, and we want that to trigger an evacuation. Where they're going with this one is if that had been in place, then we wouldn't have had people milling about in the process trying to figure out what was going on. We would have known right away that we have a problem and we need to get out of there. And they also talk about suppression engineering controls. My understanding is that they didn't have any fire suppression engineering controls, nothing in the ductwork, nothing in dust collectors, nothing anywhere else that would have stopped this in an early phase so that it did not spread to the whole facility like it did. So the feeling is that if they had that pre-deflagration detection, people would have known, people would have been able to evacuate. If they had the suppression engineering controls, once those people had evacuated, hopefully the suppression engineering controls would have stopped the situation before it got out of control, and they would have saved the plant and, you know, and any injuries that might have happened before that suppression system kicked in. So that's number 8. And we had one more for the company itself. Joe, what's that?
The final recommendation that the CSB made to Didion is to contract a competent third party to develop and implement a process safety leadership and culture program. And they specifically said that this should be based on the guidance of the CCPS's guidelines for auditing process safety management systems and process safety leadership from the boardroom to the front line. And then they list which elements that the program should include at a minimum. And again, this recommendation is just based on some of the findings that the CSB found here, where the process safety culture and leadership were just really lacking. And they felt that that actually contributed to the event. So this recommendation is just, you know, to ensure that they create a culture where something like this is not possible. And we've talked a lot about this on the podcast. We'll link to an episode that we have as well, where we talk about why process safety should matter to those in leadership positions. And I'm sure you can layer in here, Rob, I think this is something that you are really passionate about specifically as well. So it's good to see that they included this kind of culture element as a recommendation.
Absolutely. You know, for senior management or a board of directors at a facility which has these type of hazards, they need to understand process safety. They need to understand what the hazards are, what the risks are, what they need to do to manage appropriately to prevent the sort of incident from happening. You know, everything from having adequate staff, having adequate technical people with an adequate understanding of the hazards and how to safely operate the process, how to make sure that we're maintaining it properly. And, you know, if you have a facility with known combustible dust, the report specifically said that the SDS for this material that the company developed actually says that it's a combustible dust. So they at some level, they knew this was that this was an issue. Senior leadership needs to understand that. And we have some clients, some of them are fairly big, and I have conversations with their senior process safety folks in their companies, and they express frustration because their senior management doesn't really understand that, you know, they came from different industries, or they came from different types of processes, or they came from different functions. They came from finance or sales and marketing or something they don't understand, or they came from the industry and they understood, but they're bombarded with other requirements and other things that take their focus away from process safety. So yeah, I'm a little passionate about it. And my actual plan is to use this in helping those senior managers help their senior management and their boards, et cetera, understand the hazards that they have and how to make sure they have a great or have a good or great process safety culture. So, okay. So those are the 9 recommendations for the company. We have, 3 of them for OSHA. So the first one I'll talk about is, you know, at this point, combustible dust has no real regulatory regime. There's no standard related to combustible dust. PSM does not include combustible dust. So the first recommendation that CSB has to OSHA is to promulgate a standard for all industries that handle combustible dust, which is a lot of them. And it should be based on various NFPA standards. Now, NFPA has a good set of standards, but the problem is that they're not actually required. They may be required at the state level, and you know, there's ways that PSM can pull this in, and ways that maybe R&P might be able to pull this in. But if you don't have a PSM process on your site and you don't have an R&P process at your site, then there's not really clear guidance on what you have to do. So their first recommendation, and I'm not going to go through and read it, but their first recommendation is to generate a standard based on those NFPA standards, which are very strong. And the recommendation includes a list of what should be the minimum elements, and it's things that we've talked about here already, so I won't kind of rehash that. But, you know, it is clear that OSHA should be doing something here with combustible dust, and hopefully, you know, maybe this recommendation will move that needle a little bit further. So that's the first one. Joe, what's the second one?
Yeah, so the second one is actually following the implementation of what you just described. So them coming out with a standard for combustible dust. The recommendation is also to update the grain handling facility standard to clarify that grain handling facilities with combustible dust are now covered by this new combustible dust standard that you just described as the previous recommendation. So they just want to make sure that it's, as you said, very clear to industries that handle combustible dust, in this case, grain handling facilities, just really clear to them what is required so that something like this can be prevented, and that the proper programs are in place to deal with the hazards that they may not be totally aware that they have. And then finally, the CSB recommended to OSHA to develop a program to trigger follow-up inspections when hazard alert letters are issued for combustible dust hazards and there is insufficient evidence to demonstrate that those hazards have been abated. So this one, actually, I'm not totally sure on this one, Rob. Maybe you can go into some details here, but I assume the hazard alert letters are kind of like how there are national emphasis programs or things like that, but I'm not totally clear on this one.
Well, there are hazard alert notifications that come out, you know, periodically when an incident like this happens, or if there's something that OSHA or someone else thinks is could be, you know, of wider significance. But the problem with those, and it's the problem with that whole issue of issuing alerts, is that there's no mechanism to make sure that, oh, we've looked at, you know, oh, we got this hazard alert. But now, whether that's from OSHA, whether that's from CCPS puts out their, you know, their safety beacon, right? And sometimes those safety beacons has, hey, this bad incident happened, and this is what we should learn from it. There's no need to demonstrate, oh yeah, we looked at that and this is why these are, we're covered in these areas, but this one right here, we're not covered in, and this is what we're going to do to abate that, to make that right. So I think that that's a good approach. I don't know the current framework of it. I don't think alert letters are used significantly, so I don't know. I'm a little surprised by this one myself, but I think in theory it makes a lot of sense. And I have done work with some companies that within the company, they would have, if there were a medical treatment or some sort of major environmental incident at the company, they would put out an alert out and have key findings. And then each of the sites would have to say, okay, for those findings, this is what we have. Like there was a leak of a hot oil system and it caused a fire. Well, we don't have any hot oil systems, or we have a hot oil system and this is our maintenance program, whatever. So yeah, that's I think it's a good one. I'm not familiar with any sort of framework for that to happen at this point, certainly not at a national level. So we have one more recommendation that we wanted to cover, and that is a recommendation that CSB made to the NFPA, and basically comes down to, they think that NFPA should update standard number 61, which is a standard for the prevention of fires and dust explosions in agricultural and food processing facilities, or any successor standards that may incorporate that sort of thing. But they want to make sure that the standards used for ag products, which is what this corn would be, include a few things. And I'm not going to read through them all, but they want dust hazard analyses on all equipment. Right now, the current edition allows for some types of equipment to not have dust hazard analyses done on them. And so CSB wants the requirement to do a DHA on all equipment if it contains combustible dust. Incorporate the additional guidance for management of change. So they want to basically beef up the requirements for management of change. And they want to do that based on some other NFPA requirements, specifically in NFPA 652, which is the standard on the fundamentals of combustible dust. There's some sections there that they want to pull in, as well as CCPS has a book called The Guidelines for the Management of Change for Process Safety. So they want to pull that into the requirements that NFPA uses in NFPA 61. And then the last one is update the requirements for incident investigations to include some guidance from NFPA 652, except make that a mandatory requirement as opposed to being optional. And then also CCPS has a book called Guidelines for Investigating Process Safety Incidents. And so there's a couple chapters there that CSB wants pulled into NFPA's structure for combustible dust at ag and food processing facilities. And I would assume that sort of thinking also would go into all of the other NFPA standards for combustible dust. So that's it. Boy, that's a lot of recommendations. 13 recommendations.
Yes.
It'll be interesting to see obviously the company ones, hopefully they'll be doing those. It's always interesting to see what OSHA and NFPA do as a follow-up from these. I guess time will tell, but certainly I think these are strong recommendations for CSB to be making.
Definitely. So now we kind of tried to pivot and talk about other types of facilities that could be at risk from incidents such as these, because of course you don't read this report and think, well, this can only happen at a facility that is processing corn in exactly the same
it's
way.
Not. That's
really not
oh,
the
come
case.
On. No, that definitely is not the case. So what right. sorts of facilities should be concerned here, right? Well, anything that generates a dust, anything that processes a dust, unless you've done the testing and you know that your particulates are not combustible, then you should assume they are. And what industries are we talking about? Well, obviously we're talking about agriculture, right? We're talking about chemicals and plastics use dust all the time. Plastic processing, plastic processing plants, if you're cutting plastics or anything like that, that certainly will generate dust. Sugar, we know from the tragedy down at Imperial Sugar, that we know that sugar can cause major issues, right? So anything that can be made of dust and is in any way organic can have a dust hazard, a combustible dust hazard associated with it. So if you are in any sort of industry like that, you should at least be taking pause here and saying, hey, is there anything that I should do related to this?
Right. And then as part of that, the CSB actually has started including in their reports some key lessons for the industry. So these are just some larger general learnings that you can kind of keep in mind and make sure that you're taking into consideration so that you are helping to prevent something similar from happening at your facility. And so these may give you some ideas for gaps that you've got and things you can work on. These may also line up with some things you're already doing, and you can kind of give yourself a pat on the back for keeping these in mind. But the CSB did identify 8 of these key lessons for industry. So what was number 1, Rob?
So the first one was companies should ensure pneumatic transport and dust collection ductwork is designed to maintain a minimum transport velocity, and that companies should determine the appropriate minimum velocity based on their specific dust. So as some of these will sound familiar because they were actually part of the recommendations, but essentially, right, the company here, Didion, did not have adequate transport velocity in their pneumatic system to keep all the fine dust from settling out. So that ended up being part of the problem. So if you have the sort of pneumatic transport, you know, ductwork, dust collection systems at your facility, make sure that you're maintaining that minimum transport velocity. Number 2.
Right. Yep. Number 2 is to ensure effective prevention and mitigation of combustible dust deflagrations. Engineering controls must be utilized in conjunction with one another when designing a dust safety system. And they list detection, suppression, isolation, venting, and pressure containment, all things that we've touched on earlier in this episode. But just to make sure that you've got all of these in place, because you really just want as many layers of protection as you can get, and designing your processes to have detection, suppression, isolation, all of these things help ensure that you don't have an event such as this one. So keep this in mind when you're designing your dust safety systems.
All right, number 3, we didn't really talk about this earlier, but the report does go into a little bit of detail related to fire and building codes. So the third thing that they recommend that companies do is to review fire and building codes to determine the type of construction and evaluate any additional requirements based on the hazards of the materials being handled in the process. Fire code and building codes both have many requirements for processes that are in buildings that handle highly hazardous chemicals or other hazardous materials like combustible dust. So make sure that you understand what those building code requirements are. Joe, you mentioned before that, you know, the building was built a long time ago and it has been, you know, it has been built onto and updated here and there. You know, sometimes with these building codes, existing buildings are exempt. And, you know, it's only if we do renovations worth so much money or, you know, whatever, that you end up having to kind of dust those building codes off again to look to see what do we need to do to make sure that we comply. It would still be a good idea for you to keep up to date on those. They do change over time. Keep up to date on them and consider whether a requirement that is in a building code, even if you're not required to do it by your local, you know, building requirements and building code and fire code requirements, it might be good to do just for a risk management standpoint. So that's number 3. What's number 4?
Yeah. So number 4, the fourth key lesson for industry is that companies should ensure that the standards they're applying are applicable and appropriate to the hazards that they've got going on. So like we mentioned before, this facility was following food safety standards, which is really good because they were helping to prevent food hazards like pathogens, contaminants. And that was good because they were, you know, processing corn for consumption, but they really were not addressing the full spectrum of hazards here. And they really left out a lot of issues related to combustible dust. So just make sure that you are really applying all of the applicable standards. And they specifically in this key lesson call out DHAs. So just ensure that if you've got dusts, you are doing a DHA, especially if they're known to be combustible, to just make sure that you really are addressing all of the process hazards effectively. And then what is number 5, Rob?
So number 5, employers should utilize the findings of external audits to identify and correct hazards that could result in significant incidents resulting in injuries and property damage. This company had information from OSHA, had information from their insurance company, and maybe some others. Findings in audits that those people did related to combustible dust and basically the way that it could end up in some sort of a significant incident. And they appear to, at least from what I saw, they appear to either ignore or certainly not fully address those findings. So you know, the reason why we have external audits, right, is to not just to kind of slap your hand to say, oh, you're not doing things right, but there's a reason for all or certainly most of these requirements have some sort of reason why they're in place. So if you have a finding from an audit, whether it's in this case, they're calling out external audits, but even internal audits, if you have a finding from any sort of an audit, you should be looking at it to see how can we close this and do what we are supposed to do to manage the risk. Now, that's number five. What's number six?
Yep. Number six says a fire inside an enclosed combustible dust handling process should not be considered an incipient fire because it cannot be characterized without the risk of increasing the severity of the incident.
All right. And the seventh one, to ensure that hazards are appropriately assessed, employers should consider abnormal and upset conditions when assessing personal protective equipment. So when we do our PPE hazard assessments, we don't want to just think about normal operations, but what happens if things go wrong? What should we be doing to protect our people?
Yes.
Number eight.
Number eight is safety regulations do not guarantee the safety of a process. Rather, regulations are the minimum threshold for maintaining safe operations. Largely unregulated hazards, such as combustible dust hazards, can exist in an otherwise regulated process. These hazards must be controlled beyond the existing regulatory requirements through the adoption of current industry standards and through the development of new regulations to prevent safety incidents. So this one's wordy, but I wanted to read the whole thing because I think it's a good point. It's basically saying regulations are the minimum of what you should be doing. They're guidelines for the minimum. You can, of course, always do more. And then also in cases where we have some stuff that really doesn't have a ton of regulation, such as combustible dust, we really need to make sure that we keep up to date on any sort of guidelines and encourage bodies such as OSHA to develop requirements so that everybody is very clear on what they should be doing to kind of mitigate the hazards when they are dealing with things like this. So I think this is a good one. And it's a good reminder that there could be cases where you are handling something that doesn't have a ton of regulation associated with it, but it doesn't mean that there's not guidance for it. It just may be a little bit more difficult to find, but it's important to do so.
Well, if there's an NFPA standard for what you're doing and your argument is, well, nothing's telling me I have to do that, that's something that I think you probably need to really take a look at to see if that's really the best way to protect yourself, protect your business, protect your people.
Right.
All right. So that's it. So that was a long report, Joe. This is a long podcast. I think this is one of our longer ones, but we can thank CSB for their 196 page report. We did the best we could to boil it down for you guys. But I think with that, I think we're ready to close. So if you do have a comment about this week's episode, an idea for a future episode, or a question about anything related to process safety, we would always love to hear from you. You can always send us a voicemail using the link in our episode description, or you can shoot us an email to podcast@amplifiedconsultants.com.
Yes. And if this is the first time you're joining us for an incident breakdown episode, we do have a lot of other ones that we've released in the past based on CSB final reports. So we always appreciate the work that they're doing to spread awareness. And we feel like we're doing our part by giving you an audio version of these reports and kind of a synopsis. And then of course, we always do link to the full report and we do encourage you to go check it out. So that'll be linked in our episode description. But if you're interested in hearing our prior incident breakdown episodes, there are many of those in our library and you can find that on our website. And there is a search function on our podcast page where you can put incident breakdown and see all of our previous CSB final report episodes. And the CSB has also released a schedule for their remaining open investigations. So if you will follow our podcast on your favorite platform, we'll be releasing episodes to go with those final reports as they get released.
All right. So our goal here at Amplify Process Safety is to save lives by partnering with companies that handle highly hazardous chemicals and dust, combustible dust hazard chemicals as well, to create world-class process safety systems, because we feel that these systems will help to prevent catastrophic incidents like fires, explosions, and toxic releases. Please don't hesitate to reach out to us if we can help guide you on your process safety journey. So for Joe, I will say thank you for listening. And until next time, be safe out there.
We appreciate you joining us for this episode of Amplify Your Process Safety. Head to our website, amplifyconsultants.com, to find our show notes and other resources. Thank you for joining us in our mission to ultimately save lives by advancing process safety right here on Amplify Your Process Safety. Until next time.